okay, IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And to join the CCG, you go here to the following link that is in IR. And you may need to ensure have a W3C account first, which you can do following location. And then the W3C contributor license agreement, if you want to see the license information before joining, it's available here. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the following link in the IRC. We use IRC to queue speakers to call as well as to take minutes. So let us know if you have issues connecting to IRC. I think if you got a meeting invite, the IRC link would be there. Otherwise, it's on the CG page. All attendees should type present plus, that's the word present, the symbol plus, no space in between, to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. So you can see a few other people doing that here. And in IRC, type Q plus, the letter Q and the symbol plus, no space in between, to add yourself to the queue to speak with an optional reminder. So let's see, Q plus to mention something, the word to after Q plus. And if you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. And please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always bless again. And lastly, the meeting is held by voice, not IRC. So, you know, please, if you have something interesting, try to add yourself to the queue, talk about over voice so that it doesn't get buried in just IRC discussion. Okay, we need a scribe. And do we have any volunteers for scribing? We're going to start scribe, what's it called, assignment soon, just so we make sure we're not overtaxing one person or the other. Let me go through some of the people who haven't already. And that's my pug in the background. Sorry for the noises. Stuart Freeman, would you mind scribing today?
Sure.
And let me know if you have any questions as we go.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, next let's go through introductions and reintroductions. So this is a point where if you are new to the call, if you've never joined before, we ask you to introduce yourself. And for any aliases I don't recognize, I'll go through and call on people too. So I think I see Scott Gallant on the call. Scott, could you introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm multitasking with children here. How's it going? I do have the chat up on a small mobile screen as well, so I apologize as I get used to the process. 20-plus years education technology, a little bit of healthcare experience and data interoperability, working currently with a blockchain organization that adds a governance, low-friction layer and process to identify and determine trust between disparate sources. That organization's name is WebShield. I also run a nonprofit in the education space called EdSpecs, the Education Security and Privacy Exchange. I do a lot of privacy consulting on the side. I think that's good for now, but looking forward to engaging with you guys. Thank you, Kim.
Great. Thanks for joining us. Anyone else new to the call that wants to introduce themselves?
Hi, this is Nick Hathaway. I'm with eLocker. I have 25 years of experience in higher education, principally at the University of Oklahoma. And through eLocker, I'm working on a digital wallet for an interoperable learning record, principally located in a network of institutions and employers in the Oklahoma City area. Thank you for the opportunity.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Nick. And lastly, I'm going to call on one more alias. I think Laura from Washington, from University of Washington. Are you able to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Can you hear me, Kim?
Yes. Hi.
Oh, great. Hi. Yeah, I'm Laura Harkey. I'm a business analyst at the University of Washington, and I work with the Identity and Access Management team. We're mostly working on higher ed verifiable credential use cases. With an eye to adopting DLT technology at UW. I'm partnering with the registrar there and our own IAM team. We're also really interested in the SSI space and use cases and how we can adopt that technology into our identity registry.
Great. Thank you, Laura.
Sure. Thank you.
As one more person joined, Joshua Marks from Public Consulting Group. Covering for
Hi, Joshua.
How you doing?
Hi, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, I am the co-chair of the IMS Global Case Task Force. I am the chief architect for the Broward CLR initiative and working closely with Greg and IMS Global on completion of the IMS Global Comprehensive Learner Record Specification.
Great, thank you for joining us. Okay, I think we can move to the main topic now. Let's see. So, Ori, I don't know if you had a preferred order. I had written everything in a certain order, but then realized people might prefer to see the demo first. So if you have a preferred order, feel free to do that, but I'll just see them up very quickly. And so there are a few libraries that I found really interesting that Ori pointed me to, and I'll give context as he's going, but one is a signature suite for verifiable credentials that solves some of the problems that that I have had throughout the years, and we can talk more to that as we get closer. He also had a verifiable credentials demo with wallets and issuers, and I think it's using the Credential Handler API, so that's a credential exchange API that we talked about. And then lastly, there are there's a repo of verifiable credential examples that or started using again, and it's something that we might consider adding our stuff to. So I saw in the IRC that Joshua had a question, is there a screen share for this call? Unfortunately, no. With the CCG tooling, we don't have screen share, but what happens is people share links. And so I think for Ori's, it's mostly, he has some live demos that we can do on our own. So Ori, with that, I'll turn over to you to, take whatever direction that you want or whatever flow you want.
Awesome. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
All right. So I've organized all of the links into one of these disks. So hopefully we can follow along based on all the links that are assigned there. So I'll give a brief introduction. So I'm Ori Steele. I'm CEO and co-founder of Transmute. There's a little bit of echo, so I'm not sure if mute yourself while you're not speaking. That would be helpful.
That sounds better now.
Right. So at Transmute, we work on decentralized identifiers, verifiable credentials, mostly in supply chain track and trace management use cases. And some of the demos that we're going to be sharing today are part of our work for the Department of Homeland Security Silicon Valley Innovation Program, and specifically our work with U.S. Customs and Border Protection around securing raw materials imports. So we're part of a number of companies working with DHS SVIP using verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers. And these demos are part of the work that we're doing to try and encourage interoperability. And a lot of them are open source specifically to try and make it easier to understand how to use things like the verifiable credentials, HTTP APIs that are being built at the W3C, things like the credential handler API also at the W3C, and obviously the verifiable credentials data model and the decentralized identifier spec. So with that, I think I will just kind of dive right into the links. So I posted them in the chat already. You can follow along by opening up that gist and clicking the links in the order in which I tell you to. So let's start by clicking the wallet .interop.transmute.world link. It's the first one. And when you open that link, you should be invited to allow this website to manage credentials on your behalf. And before you click accept, you should know that this is just a demo. It's for demonstration purposes. These credentials are basically fake credentials. They're going to be stored in local storage for the purposes of this demo. It's not a totally secure environment, but they're not real credentials, so don't worry. And the source code for this demo is available under the source code link on the left-hand side of that website. So once you've clicked agree on the wallet page, you are done. You can leave that page open and go back to the other list of links. And next, we're going to go click the issuer page. So I click that page, open it up. You should see a large steel beam that's glowing hot and some information about certified mill test reports. That's because most of our interop work is about raw materials imports and steel. But we can click this drop down under the type and select a university degree credential and click the Receive Credential button. And then I have to wait a second. And I guess we're about to see how much parallelism this VC API can take. So the website should say, you should get a pop-up. It should say, the following website wants to send credentials to you. And it's the issuer website that we're on. Click Next. Now you should see the Transmute wallet show up. And here you would see other credential handler API wallets that you might have had before. But in this case, you want to select the Transmute wallet. And then finally, it should say, are you sure you wish to store this credential? It's a university degree. Its subject is did example 123. Its issuer is didweb, vc.transmute.world. And its issuance date is not correct. So I hit confirm. And it should say, credentials stored in wallet. So now what we want to do is we want to go back to that wallet page that we had open. So you can either go back to that tab or click the wallet.interop.transmute.world link in the gist provided. And then you want to refresh on that page. And you should see a university degree credential. And if you click the little chevron next to it, you should see the credential details inside of it. All right, so the final step before we move on is, are there any, maybe we should look at you, or are there any questions about this part so far? Or shall we just go through the end of the demo and take questions all at the end?
There's, Q plus to offer applause. Nate, you're up. Yes, I was happy as well to see there's actual verifiable credential in there. And yeah, keep going through. I have some questions. Maybe you can talk us through the the standards used along the way, but I'd like to see the next demo first.
Okay. So we're going to assume now that you are a person who has a credential, which should be true of everyone who's following along. And so the next step is to go back to the interop links page and open the verifier link. And so again, you're going to be seeing hopefully some cargo crates in the background and some default population about certified mill test reports. And click that drop down and select the university degree credential and click the verify button. And the website's going to ask, this website is basically trying to receive credentials from you. It's a verifier website. You're going to click next. You select the Transmute wallet again. And here, the credential handler API has basically sent a query to the wallet to ask for a specific kind of credential, in this case, a university degree. They're rendering a filter on a table to sort of limit the number of credentials that you might have to think about in order to respond to this request. And so here's the university degree credential. We're going to click the share button. And we can see that the verifiable presentation verification succeeded. So that's great. We're all really excited about that. But what does that actually mean? And so I think the final thing to open is to click the interoperable VC HTTP API link, the first one back in the gist with all of the links. And when you click that, you should see Transmute VC API Swagger documentation. And I think this is a good place for us to sort of briefly talk about what happened in the demo that we just saw. So the first thing that happened is we created a wallet, a web wallet, and it was for demonstration purposes, and it was going to hold our credentials that we were going to get from websites and that we were going to use that wallet to present credentials to websites. The second thing that happened is we had to get a credential to put in that wallet. And this is where this API comes into play. So under the W3C CCG, there's an issuer and a verifier HTTP API specification that is under development. And this API that we're looking at, you know, on the screen, hopefully right now with Swagger, is one implementation of this API. But the idea is that anybody who implements the standard can stand up an HTTP API that does issuance of credentials and verification of credentials and presentations. And so I guess the other thing to consider is the issuer in this case was a DID web. So that's under the decentralized identifiers specification, there's a DID method called DID web, and that's the issuer in this case, and it's actually listed in this API as well under the well-known DID JSON endpoint. And if you click that box and then you hit try it out and you hit execute, you will see the DID document for that DID web, and that DID document contains the keys that are used to issue the verifiable credentials. So when we got the credential from the issuer API, this DID web is the entity that was signing and issuing. And when we presented that credential to the verifier API, this DID web was the entity that had keys available that weren't revoked, that were valid, that allowed us to say that that fake university degree credential was correct. Right, and then I guess the only final note would be that the credential format itself was a linked data proof verifiable credential. So it used JSON-LD signature suite, and that JSON-LD signature suite, in the case of the university degree credential, is the ED25519 signature 2018 suite. But you can create credentials with various other signature suites, and before we dive into signature suites as a whole, we should probably pause and take any additional questions we might have now. That's everything that I had planned to demo, but I'm happy to walk through any of the remaining links that are provided.
So I put myself on the queue, and I was digging up links, so sorry if I missed this part. Did you talk about the credential handler API as well?
Briefly, but perhaps it's worth going back over it again. So the credential handler API is a standard for interacting with verifiable credentials on websites. And I don't know that I don't think I included a link to it in here.
I'll dig up a link while you're talking.
But, you know, basically the credential handler API, what it does is it exposes a set of interfaces when you're on a website for that website to offer to, manage credentials for you. So that's what we experience when we're on the wallet website and it says, do you want to allow this website to manage credentials for you? That's the credential handler API exposing, this opportunity for allowing that wallet website to manage credentials. And then similarly on the issuer and verifier websites, that API is a way of getting credentials from a wallet to a website or from a website to a wallet. So there's a set of queries that are exposing requests that a website might have for a specific set of credentials. And there's a set of APIs that allow for a website to offer to store a credential. And then through the integration with the credential handler API, you can store and sort of put in and take out credentials from the wallet itself. And that's what was happening behind the scenes when we went to those three websites, the wallet, issuer, and verifier. All of the transport for the credentials was handled through the Chappie interface.
And a quick note on that, which is, so for credential handler API, we haven't talked about it in this group before. So I think that we've talked about, what are the various data model standards and protocols throughout the ecosystem. And, one where we're still doing a lot of work is storage. The other is credential exchange. So this one is the most mature from what I know, from the sort of verifiable credentials context. So another one is, I forget what it's called, but another one is being incubated through Decentralized Identity Foundation. And I think it's called Credential Exchange, Credential Manifest, something.
There's a couple. There's DIDCOM, which in some ways is similar to Chappie. And then there's Credential, I think they're called Proof Presentation Requests Standard at the Decentralized Identity Foundation, and there's some pending CCG work items for doing similar things with Chappie in a more formal manner.
Okay, great. And then from the Open Badges ecosystem, something that people may be more familiar with is the Badge Connect API that's doing some similar functionality that Nate could talk to a little bit more if he wants to add himself to the queue. But I think it would be interesting to talk about how all of these would align in a future call. And we have Leonard next on the queue.
Yeah, so I'm looking this the Chappie API over, and it seems to be very tied to browser-specific implementations, not arbitrary client servers, which is a huge focus on service workers. Is that by design?
Yeah, so this Chappie work is sort of related to a number of long-running issues in the browser sort of vendor space. And its implementation today is a polyfill. And so it is very tightly coupled to browser integrations because it's about getting credentials to and from websites primarily. I think you're totally it's totally correct to say that it is very browser oriented because it's about being on a website and having that website be able to ask for credentials or have that website be able to ask to give you a credential.
Is there an expectation of server to server use, or is that a separate and a whole nother API that is yet to be written?
I think the idea is that Chappie might have a number of other transports that it could work on. So, for example, you might put Chappie requests over Bluetooth, or Chappie requests over GidCom, or maybe Chappie requests over HTTP or something like that. But I haven't seen anything about that just yet.
Okay. And that would get raised in this group, though. This is a CCG proposal.
Yeah, I would expect that any extensions to the Chappie interface to support other transports would be W3 CCG work items.
Great, thank you.
Quick point of order, I guess. So Stuart mentioned that voice over IP was hanging up on him. So Stuart, is that still happening?
Yes. So I'm going to try dialing in from a real phone right now if you want to take over from me for a second. Thanks.
Okay, yeah, I can scribe for you while it's happening. Okay, Nate, you're up.
Cool. Thanks for the presentation and demonstration of credential handler happening between a website and a user agent, a browser. One of the things that we just talked about was server-to-server transmission of credentials service-to-service without the user being involved at transmission time. There's a spec that operates over open badges called Badge Connect that's coming out real soon. IMS is really close to finalizing it. It'll be released as the Open Badges 2.1 version, and it's going to go into public availability to read the spec very, very soon. If it's not already there, I'll look after I get off the line here. The idea there is it's OAuth 2 dynamic registration plus OAuth 2 authorization code grants to enable users to provide permission for their credentials to transfer from service to service. And you'd see a pretty similar demo really to what we just saw, except that the wallet application, instead of being a website that operates using the browser, very cool, clever thing that serves a bunch of use cases, the Badge Connect is set up to be really service to service. Here's a website that you sign into, you choose sort of your home base, your identity provider, and that identity provider can also be a resource server for your credentials. You grant permission to access your credentials on other sites, but you have to know the domain name of your Badge Connect host, your backpack, when you are setting up those connections. So if you're on an issuer site and you want to store your credential, you can tell it your domain of your host, and it goes out and does a little service-to-service auto-registration procedure, and then it redirects you over to your host to confirm a permission for that website to send you a credential. And then once it has that permission, it can send you additional credentials in the future as well. It's worth noting that that works on open badges as opposed to things in the verifiable credential data model. But the API on that is fairly extensible. You could imagine the same authorization procedure occurring, and then the contents of the transmission of what is sent to your agent there being a variety of different things. And so the IMS spec specifies how open badges will transfer over it, but we could imagine some additional scopes being added to it, and you'd be able to send other things as well. So I work at Concentric Sky. We make the Badger product. We're implementing Badge Connect pretty soon. It'll be available in a couple months on production after it goes through some security reviews. But yeah, we're interested in the broader conversation of how does this work with the types of credentials that we're talking about that use the W3C data model. IMS is interested in some sort of compatibility between open badges and verifiable credentials. The paper that Kim and I wrote a couple years ago for rebooting Web of Trust exposes one possible way for those to be compatible that we might look at. And if they are compatible, then we should talk about how they transfer around between these different use cases, issuer to recipient, recipient to verifier. Both Credential Handler and Badge Connect can do this, and we potentially could converge on these specs at some point if we can figure out the paperwork. Thanks.
Thanks, Nate. And we have an issue. I think we lost our scribe. I think I scared him away. Let's see. Do we have another volunteer for scribe? Okay, here we go. Awesome. Stuart, can you take over again? Okay, thank you. Okay, so where were we? So Ori, let me hand over back to you so you can keep working through the links.
Sure. This specification about Badge Connect is really interesting. I'd love to dive deeper into that, you know, especially if there's reference implementation or code examples. I'll have to dig through the link that's been provided. But thank you so much for sharing that. I think just based on my limited understanding of it, it seems like it, one place that it could be dropped into the demo that we just saw would be on the issuer side. Instead of getting a credential from the issuer API itself, you might go out to your Badge Connect API endpoint from your Chappie wallet and get pull a credential into Chappie from Badge Connect resource server and then present it back out through Chappie to another site. So I could see a number of ways that these two things could be directly integrated today, maybe, but I guess we should probably stop thinking about that and go back to the links. So there's two more sections in the links that I provided. The first is a signature suite section, and the second is a verifiable credentials examples repo. So it might actually be helpful to go to the verifiable credentials example repo first. So this is a repository under the CCG. And it contains some examples. And I think the key, there's some pending pull requests from a couple of different people open. One of those pending pull requests is adding an example university degree, which is the credential format that we just shared. And if you click that pending pull request, you can see the credential format we've just looked at. And in particular, there's this proof type under the credential called JSON Web Signature 2020. And that gets into these verifiable credentials signature suites. So in the interop links gist that I shared, there's two signature suites, which we at Transmute have worked on, which are relatively new. And they have some features that we find desirable. Not everyone likes every signature suite that's out there, and some people prefer signature suites that are sort of tightly coupled between one key representation and one signature format. And at Transmute, as with a sort of limited developer workforce, we tend to prefer signature suites that are one key representation and support for multiple keys in the representation and support for a signature format per key type. And so in this case, the first one is this LDS JWS 2020. This is this JSON Web Signature 2020 signature suite. And if you click that link, this is an open source linked data signature suite. And there's some examples in JavaScript for how to use it with the verifiable credentials data model. And if you scroll down to the supported JWS ALG section on the GitHub repo for the signature suite, you can see that there's support for a couple different cryptographic representations that are fairly popular. And I think the key takeaway or key point I would like to make on this signature suite is there's these three representations of the verifiable credentials data model. There's linked data proofs, which apply to JSON linked data. There's verifiable, there's the VCJWT representation, which puts a verifiable credential inside of a JSON web token. And then there's the zero knowledge proofs. And in the case that you are either using a linked data proof or a JSON web token for your credential, you can actually use the same key to issue both of those kinds of credentials. If it's a if it's formatted as a JSON web key, which is the format that the signature suite uses. So one of the main reasons that we built the suite was we wanted a single key representation that would maximally support both the JSON web token representation and the popular cryptography for JSON web tokens, and the JSON link data representations, JSON link data proofs. And this suite does an okay job of doing that. You know, it's still under development, and you know, we're working to improve it. But if you're either using JSON web tokens or link data proofs, this suite should support most of the cryptography that you would want to be using for either of those cases. So I think that's all of the, I guess there's one other link that I haven't talked about, and that's the GPG signature suite, which supports the same keys as the JWS Jose signature suite, but uses the GPG key encoding and GPG signature encoding formats. And it's compatible with things like GPG Agent, which runs on Linux and Mac, and you know, works with YubiKey and that kind of thing. GPG is really popular in the software supply chain environment. In fact, most Linux distributions or Tails and Tor distributions, they're all signed with GPG keys. And so we really like GPG. It's been around for a really long time, and we wanted a verifiable credential signature suite that worked with GPG keys, and this is one such signature suite. Cool. So I think that's basically all the links that I had. I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Great. We have a queue building up. So Leonard, you're up first.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if you've given any consideration to or plan to align with Etsy's JADES standards so that you've got compatibility with EU's standard signatures?
I'm not sure. Can you provide a link to the standard that you're referring to?
Absolutely. I'll put it in the chat.
Are you talking about EDCI, Etsy?
No, I'm talking about ETSI, which is the European Telecommunications Standards Institute. They're the organization that does standards in the European Union around, among other things, digital signatures. So if you plan to use any form of digital signature in the EU for legally binding purposes, it has to comply with their standards.
Great. Yes, thank you. And a link would be great, too.
Yep, I'll put that in. No problem.
Thank you. Nate, you're up next.
Sure. So I just wanted to, as an implementer in the space who is, you know, choosing signature suites coming soon, I just wanted to have a quick discussion on how we can use this group maybe to build an ecosystem around the selection of specific suites, and then what we need to do as implementers in these various different roles of credential issuer, verifier, the operator of wallet technology, to make sure that we don't have a situation where users get into expectation that their credential is going to work with a particular set of tools, but then when it comes to it, those providers just haven't agreed on signature suites and they can't talk to each other. What do we need in terms of software like installed on our systems in various different languages, and what do we need in terms of agreements between different organizations in a market vertical to be able to actually produce good interoperability for the users, so we don't have really frustrating experiences where we presume compatibility and then find out that it is not really there?
That is a great question. Yeah. So I think there's a serious risk in this community, you know, both the decentralized identifiers community and the verifiable credentials community, around different companies going off doing their own thing, and then having each of them have something that looks really close, but you know, it just doesn't actually work together. So there's a couple cryptographic basics that we can try and agree to as a community that will help. So one of them is agreeing to a key representation. That's agreeing to use things like public key JWK in the DID core specification, or you know, public key base 58. If you want to use base 58, JWK has a number of reasons why, there's a number of reasons why I would encourage everyone in the world to just put all of their effort behind public key JWK. So the first reason is that it's compatible with Jose, which is the most widely adopted cryptographic representation for identity that's available today. So that's Jose is behind OpenID Connect, OAuth. And so there's a lot of existing software and tooling out there that supports Jose today in many different languages. So if you have the opportunity to represent your keys as JWK, which is the JSON Web Key, it's the key specification for Jose, you should really be representing your keys using that, in my opinion. Not everyone will agree with that, but if you do represent your keys in that format, lots of software out there will be able to very easily interact with your keys. And then the second piece is the signature representation. And again, I would recommend Jose. So the signature suite that I mentioned that uses linked data signatures actually uses Jose signatures underneath detached JWS. And that means the same thing applies to those signatures. There's lots of software out there that can create a JWS because that's a requirement to create JWTs, which are what are used in OpenID Connect and OAuth everywhere. So I think as a community, it's really helpful to sort of drive attention on where do we have software tooling that is established, that's been well vetted, that we have widespread implementation of it, and how can we adopt that existing software tooling to meet emerging standards instead of building an entirely new stack around an emerging standard. And so that's kind of, you know, in a way, all that was a main objective that we had when we created the signature suite that we've shared today.
Cool. Well, thanks for the insight on that. I think you and I align on a lot of those points. And indeed, you know, as an example, I think already installed in our badge platform is dependencies for some antiquated Python libraries to do JSON Web Keys and JSON Web Signatures. And as another example of potential compatibility, Badge Connect is considering whether we need to do a signed software statement as part of the OAuth 2 dynamic registration protocol. And that signed software statement would be signed with a JSON Web Key and represented using the same Jose signatures, but the key representation as here's a key for this platform that would already be used by a different sort of piece of this puzzle. I think here in this community, as we gather implementers in the education space that are ready to go, one of the key questions will be, you know, what should we do out of the gate to select DID methods and signature suites so that we have a good little core of compatible pieces of software. And then also we can share open source libraries and make sure that it's compatible at the code level. But to your point, choosing specs that are well used and are used by many pieces of software already will be a leg up in making sure that we've chosen well for a rapid adoption in a core group of this community.
And I'm on the queue, but I also had some follow-up on that because, I think it's a great point about thinking through compatibility from the start. I think that already it was unclear what was the best approach to use because I think that let me try to boil this down. So the way we do LD proofs traditionally is you register a suite for every combination, like canonicalization algorithm, whatever curve you pick, the parameters, all that stuff. And so I think, the idea behind that was to avoid what they call algorithmic agility, the idea that you could come up with bad combinations of of curves that are unsafe. However, I think my main concern with that was that the CCG is effectively acting as a gatekeeper on a problem that we shouldn't be a gatekeeper to. So it maybe made more sense because we used to have the digital verification group that somehow has a complicated relationship with CCG, but it's effectively not active anymore. So we're not, you know, we're not crypto experts in the group, and we don't, it doesn't make sense for us to have that gatekeeping purpose. And so effectively people are just waiting around for their pull requests to be merged to register a new combination, and it was just unclear how to get started. Now, one other thing that Ori pointed out to me that I hadn't realized was that in the VC data model spec, you know, it's pretty complicated if you're using JOTS. So it says to use JOTS, do one of these three things. So it means that as an implementer, you have to look in like three different locations, and it's kind of tricky to implement. So I think we have a real opportunity to just be a lot clearer from the start. And, you know, the reason it's like that is kind of historical compatibility reasons. Like different vendors had already picked different solutions, but I think we're kind of green field, so we get the opportunity to save ourselves a lot of headache. And I think for those reasons, the LBS JWS 2020 suite is looking really appealing to me as, you know, a one to move forward with in our prototypes and everything. I think the last, so I actually added myself on a queue to ask about another thing, which I think a lot of us have been kind of struggling with. So like in the VC examples repository, I'm just wondering, Ori, if you can comment on, you know, the difficulties or what was your experience coming up with VC examples? Because I think that's in the BTCR hackathons, we struggled for a long time even getting decent starter examples. And so, you know, what is the context of coming up with these examples? Was it through the SBIP program? And, you know, sort of how did you go about constructing them, basically?
Yeah. So, I mean, when as an implementer, you know, our first starting point are the specifications. So we go to the DID core specification, the latest version of it. We go to the VC data model specification, the latest version of it. And then we look through for examples. And then we try and make our software produce things that look like those examples. The problem becomes when the example is so hypothetical that it doesn't actually help you as an implementer know whether you've built something that's going to work. And so that's where this VC examples repo can really be helpful, is we can provide real credential examples with real signatures that are truly verifiable in that repo. And then you will know if you can create something that looks like one of those examples, you probably have an interoperable credential format. There's a couple things to keep in mind when you're trying to create an example like that. So the first thing is if your credential format uses decentralized identifiers, you want to make sure that you pick a decentralized identifier method that it's easy for you as an implementer to make adjustments to. And of all of those methods out there, the DIDWeb method is, in my opinion, the easiest one to use for that purpose, because you can just put it on a website and you can make changes to it. You don't need to sign transactions for a blockchain. You don't need to sign the DIDWeb document in any format. You can just make changes to it on the website. You can add keys. You can remove keys. Very easy to do. And anything that uses a web browser can easily get to that. So it's very easy to share and communicate around it. So then the next thing is that you, in addition to having a DID method, you have your verifiable credential definition. You need to be careful when you craft that. And crafting a new form of verifiable credential, there's basically a couple steps that you have to do. The first is you have to define what's called a JSON linked data context for that credential. And that defines all of the properties that are in that credential in both a machine and human readable format. And that context definition and the human readable documentation associated with it need to be hosted on websites that are resolvable, where people can go and see what is the term that you've defined. So I can provide some examples using the certified mail test report work that we've done for DHS, SVIP, Customs and Border Protection. So let's see here. I'm going to just drop this link directly into the IRC. This examples repo has, for our V0.1, a number of different files in it. And the markdown file itself defines the actual credentials format. And then these other files in here define other pieces of the credential definition that need to exist for this credential to be valid. So it's important that, you basically have these links and that they're resolvable, because when people go to implement your credential format, they're going to click these links. They're going to go, exploring around, and these pages need to be hosted somewhere. So you can see that these are indeed hosted in the they're hosted in the CCG in this repo. I can share, a specific example of a credential that complies with this specification. So this is the link that I'm dropping into chat here. And the context definition for this has this, the human readable definition defines this property, the CMTR property of the credential subject. And this is a hacky example, because we're just basically saying there's this object inside of this credential and it could have anything inside of it. And the reason that we've done that is that our credential object keeps changing based on feedback that we're having from manufacturers and customs importers and various different key stakeholders. But as your credential format becomes more specific and you gain higher confidence in the required attributes and their structure and their exact names, you want to provide human readable definitions for all of those properties. And you want to make sure that there's always documentation for them, that the context is always resolvable, and the human readable version of the context is always resolvable. So those are the key parts of making a new verifiable credentials format according to the verifiable credentials data model under the W3C.
Great. Thank you, Ori. And we have Leonard on the queue next.
Yes, yeah, so I'm going to actually work backwards. And I'm going to start by disagreeing with Ori, which is, while I agree with you that having those documents available and accessible is a good thing, it's not a requirement in the spec. If you actually look in the VC data model specification, it is a recommendation. It is not a requirement that those documents exist, be available, be human readable, et cetera. Just want to be very clear when we talk about this stuff and say the right thing. So it is not a requirement. So I just wanted to make that clear. The other thing I wanted to do, which is actually why I put myself on the queue to begin with, is I was also concerned about your description, and I know you said harmful is your opinion, about the harmfulness of using JWT serialization of a VC data model. And I was curious why you think that, because I actually – have found that to be quite useful.
So according to the verifiable credentials data model, verifiable credentials and verifiable presentations must include an at context property. So that at context property, to your point, it might not be resolvable, but that credential format, it will be very, very hard for anyone to understand or use, and certainly not a thing that anyone should trust if it is not. So I think there's your point is well taken. It doesn't have to be resolvable. It's just going to be really, really hard if it isn't. And then the other question I think you had was about, why am I objecting to the JWT encoding of the VC data model? And I think my primary objection to it is the optionality in the language. So JWTs have things like, they have reserve terms like sub, ISS, EXP. I mean, these are legacy. These are terms that come from Jose that are basically about the fact that we want to have really short names for things. We want to register those reserve terms so that no one overrides them. And those terms, you know, in the case of JSON Web Tokens, are kind of they're very identity oriented, or OAuth, OpenID Connect oriented. When that JWT encoding was extended to support verifiable credentials, instead of saying the subject will always map to the credential ID subject, or the issuer will always map to the ISS field, they said you could have it both be defined in both places, have it be defined in one place and not the other, or the other place, you know, so they basically said you can put these properties anywhere. So when you want to figure out who's the issuer of a JWT verifiable credential, you can look in the ISS field, you can look in the issuer inside of the credential that's encoded, and you have a similar problem for subject and for expiration and for all of the reserved properties of JWT. So that optionality, in my opinion, was a mistake, because it just increased the complexity for anyone who's going to be implementing that VC-JWT model. If I want to support an interoperable layer around VC-JWT, and I'm getting a VC-JWT from somebody, I don't know which of those paths they took, because they had the option to take a number of different paths. And in fact, they could have taken a different path for each of those credentials. So they could have said, they could have put the credential subject could actually be repeated, but then the issuer might not be. And I have to account for all of the combinatorics complexity that was enabled by that optionality in the spec language.
Leonard, did you have any response to that?
Oh, okay. I just typed into the chat, Todd. I'm sorry. Yeah, I missed that or in the last one. We've been doing it always using the Jose JWT naming, which is how I read it, and not the VC ones. And I see where the or comes in that I had missed. So thank you for pointing that out. And I do agree that if that is the case as it reads, that is confusing and should not be the case.
Great. So I was actually on the queue. I think I'll probably move this to the mailing list, because I think that if the URIs in the context, if some are missing and it defines terms, so I think there are parts where the signature, I say, there may be problems either from a security perspective or you know, sort of invalidating the signature. And I can't go through the threat model right now because I'm thinking on the fly, but I guess I assumed that the context, so I don't know, Leonard, if you're pushing back on the human readable part of it, but it seems like if the URIs listed in the context are missing and it defines terms that are used in the, you know, the RDF canonicalization, there could be problems. So I think if they're always gone, at least it won't invalidate a signature. I think the problem more is like if it was there and it goes away, but that's probably a longer discussion and we're at time, I just realized. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ori. That was a very, very useful presentation, and we'll be following up. I think there's a lot of interesting takeaways there for our community that we can adopt in terms of how we express verifiable credentials. So thank you again, and see everyone next week. Stay safe.
Awesome. Thank you.